Okay, Fiona, are you ready? What do you want me to do?
No, Sarah, try it deeper.
Deeper? The voice?
The voice.
What do you want me to do?
Quicker.
What do you want me to do?
French?
What do you want me to do?
Still not right. Try it closer to the mic.
Closer? How close?
7 inches. Behave. And whisper.
What do you want me to do?
That's a bit scary.
How's about, what do you want me to do?
No.
What do you want me to...
No.
What do you...
No.
What do you want me...
No.
What do you want me to
no.
do?
No.
What do you want me to do?
That's it. That is it.
Great. Thanks, Miss Fandango. I'm off to the pub.
I think I'll have to recast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Fiona.
And today we're continuing our look at the adventures of what it is to be a voice actor. Fiona, what have we fathomed from our last episode?
Well, Sarah, first of all, I think we both agreed that we wanted to say thank you so much for your feedback in the Facebook group. We've had some great comments on what actors should be doing and what they need, and I think basically it just boils down to communication, doesn't it?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, it does seem that actors do like being directed, and so don't feel, you know, worried about directing them, but give them clear direction, not kind of like, I'm going to record it and I'd like you to exactly mimic the exact phraseology that I'm using, but give them direction, yeah, because that's what they'd love.
And there's some interesting questions posed, weren't there, like what kind of direction do VAs like? And I think it's like there's examples given of like, just do it better, man. It's like, whoa. And so yeah, I think things like talking about the pace of something, you know what your mix is like. If someone's doing it too slowly, tell them to whip it up a bit. If their inflection is becoming monotone, or you're not happy with they're not being playful enough with it, then tell them to play with their inflection. So yeah, it's all specifics really, isn't it? And if the accent's not right, if the mood's not right, if the tone's not right, feel
then
free
to sack them immediately.
Yes. Said Sarah again, she's being silly when she's real serious. But yeah, I do think there's a lot of scope for just communicate what you want, and then you perhaps more likely to get it. And I think there has been quite a few producers that I've worked with have been very tentative. They're not scary, am I? Am I scary, Fiona?
No. No. Now that we've explained to the directors what actors want, let's go back to actors. And we were thinking that maybe we'll go through some of the steps that you might need to take from audition to part.
Yeah.
If that would be useful for anyone.
Yeah, so hunting for auditions could take place on mostly Facebook sites or pay-to-play sites. And there's quite a lot of things on Twitter as well that you can jump on the bandwagon. We'll put some links in our show notes so as not to be boring and just do a list of things now. So have a look on that at the writing and read, which is one of the core skills you need to be a voice actor. But auditions wise, yeah, I think it's really just paying attention to what's written. So people have got specific things in mind in regards to the standard of your recording, whether they want MP3 or WAV files, whether or not they would like it in 3 takes, 2 takes, or as a whole chunk through once and a whole chunk through again. And sometimes you'll get sides. What are sides, Fiona? Do you want to explain what those are?
Sides are the lines for auditions and some descriptions of characters and whatnot. Am I right?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Ma'am. have a request for sides or the audition pieces if you're interested often directors perhaps might want to see your reel first, and we'll talk about those in a moment, or demo, as I think it's known in America. And so, yeah, just pay attention for what they would like and try to offer it. If it says, label your files like this, then label your files like that, because that's how they want it.
That is a really big thing. I've seen this come up actually in other forums before, labelling of files. I've seen some producers say that they will actually reject auditions without listening because the file has been mislabeled, because if an actor cannot follow such simple instructions as how to label it. So do read the instructions. Really important, because it does give an impression of how you're going to approach their production.
Yeah, and we'll hear from James Oliver and Zach Valenti later on in the programme about kind of efforts that they've gone through in various auditions. But I also think it's key to really give the flavour of the range of the character that you could potentially give to whatever you're auditioning for. So don't just give two similar takes of the same type of character. You know, have fun with it. And I generally do about three takes, the first two generally sticking to what's asked, and the third one going a little bit crazy or adding just a little bit of a Sarah flounce on it to perhaps make myself stand out a little bit, if that's humanly possible. So yeah, I think it is just a question of making sure that you do that. And oftentimes I'll also, if it's a long thing, I'll do a couple of short takes of whatever the lines are, and then so I get some flow for myself, I just do the whole chunking through all the way to the end as a last piece, so it just gives that real blow of character from my perspective. And I think that perhaps has helped me get one or two parts, I'm not sure, but it seems to work. Also, like for Pendant, this is the only thing that I've experienced that I've found quite traumatic as an actor, which is to record every single line, all the takes for it in one file, and then zip all those single line takes in one big massive file. It was very stressful. When I was doing that, I wasn't au fait at all, really, with any editing very much. So I did find it quite hard. But you might be asked to do that, so get prepared to be able to chop and play with your takes.
Some doors actually do auto chopping, which is brilliant. I only found this out after ages of... I'd done quite a while working e-learning where you have to chop it into thousands of miniature files. And then it was after that I thought, oh, I'll sit down and try to train myself a bit more. And so it was like how to do it automatically. And I'd been sitting there chopping it, you know, sort of copying and pasting little bits. Yep. And in fact, you can do it by dropping markers in and setting the markers. So if you are doing those kind of lines, you're working for a group that does like lines, especially if you've got consecutive ones, there are quick ways of doing them. So go onto YouTube, check out your door and see if there is a way of auto chopping your lines. I'm sure there must be a more technical word for it than that.
I think I need to update my door. Mm-hmm. Yes, exciting. So yeah, I think, and also just for thinking about your time frame of things, you know, you need to get things on time. So if it says, if it's Monday and it says get things on by Wednesday, don't leave it till Wednesday to get it in if you can help it. Try and do it in plenty of time so that yours isn't going to be with the other people that perhaps have been a little bit rushed in time. And just to show that you're keen as well, I guess, is important. And not just last minute Lily.
Because, you know, if you leave it to the last minute, you are definitely going to go down with something, aren't you?
Yes.
Every cold in the neighbourhood will be zoning in on you because it knows you've got like one evening to do it all in.
That's true. And I think the other thing to just think about is then once you've been successful in your audition, how you then proceed from there. So you've got this part, how are you going to do it? Now, I've still got a few parts that I've got that I am trying to fathom what voice to use, because lucky for me, I have a few at my disposal. And so it's a question of, you don't want to completely overwhelm yourself or the director with the type of role that you can provide once you've got the audition. So yes, I think it is that symbiotic working together to fathom, to think about as well.
And of course, yeah, when you have got that part, do be open to directing, which I think most people are. I think it's quite rare that actors aren't open to direction.
I'm hungry for it. I really am.
It can be quite spectacular when they're not. But.
Well, yes, no, there's a firework of excitement, isn't there, when someone's had a bad grievance. It's so hard. But, yeah, and it's that question of, yes, how much feedback is good.
It's quite nice, I think, yeah, we're going into directors now, aren't we? But it's very nice when a producer does tell the actors, oh, by the way, this is coming out, you know, this week or, you know, whenever, because then they can go ahead and also help with promoting it on social media and stuff like that.
Well, that's it, you know, cross-pollination is going to work. And let's just share and name those files so you can find them easily.
If you're keeping your files in a non-lossy format, so you're keeping them in, say, waveforms, really good tip I had was to turn them into FLAC files, because it's still non-lossy, but they're much smaller. They're a lot less problem on your hard drive. So yeah, I spent a little while just converting my waves into FLACs, and it has made a difference. So it's worthwhile doing if you're storing stuff from, you know, a few years back and so on.
My top tips, I guess, would be to firstly get a website, work on that, find somebody who can do that and help you if you don't know how to. Look at other people's as well, get ideas as to how they've displayed their reels, how they've displayed or linked to things and projects they're working on. Join Spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fee of a couple of £100, but it is the go-to casting thing, and it has been. When I was working in television, I used that to recruit actors. So, you know, it's been going a little while now. And I'd strongly suggest just to do as much as possible.
Yeah.
If you take me by example, I'm having a very good time doing a plethora of really exciting things. And even this week, even today, I've got something. So hooray!
Cool. Oh, cool.
And, you know, I think that's what's exciting, is that it does start to snowball after a while. And if someone hears you in something and they hear something that will transpose nicely to their project, then hopefully they'll get you on board. So, I'm finding that very exciting.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, audition for things. Because auditioning in itself is experience, because you're going to be doing lots of different roles and that kind of thing. And and you may not get that particular thing, but there might be something down the line which will, you know, roll.
Absolutely. Yeah, keep that communication going, as we've been saying. And listen to things, you know. If you're just insular and thinking I'm going to audition for everything, but you don't bother to listen to what's being made, then I think you're missing out on a huge array of experience that other actors can then share with you, how they're working, the kind of characters that you can potentially either, you know, model yourself towards or try to aspire to be. I think there's so many brilliant actors and actresses working and whatever genre and gender people would like to be called. I think it's really key to, you know, making a way.
When I first started getting into audio drama, that's how I trained myself in a way in that specific genre, was to listen to lots of audio dramas and listen to those really good actors and work out, why are they that good, you know?
How do they do that?
How do they do it? No, but seriously, yeah, copying what people do who do it very well is a very good idea, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important as well to have real world friends.
Yes.
Do you have real world friends, Fiona?
Oh.
Yeah, just real people to speak to and go out with and have fun with. Because I do find, especially currently being remote as I am, there's so many things that I do that are just by myself. And so, yeah, so jump on board the friend wagon and go get some beers with some buddies.
Actually, yeah, I think that is vital, actually, mental well-being, because when you're stuck in a booth, you know, kind of talking to invisible people for some time of the day, it is really, really vital, actually. And I have found it absolutely essential to see my real world friends, because it does keep you back grounded in reality.
Yes, my two friends are amazing. So yes, I think also a key thing is you're real. Now, we've talked a little bit about this in a few various places, and I am shocked, I tell you, Fiona, I am shocked. Shall I tell you what I'm shocked about?
Tell me, Sarah, tell me what you're shocked about.
It is the absolute disparity of the cost of a demo reel in Britain and in the United States of America. Over here, I got mine done a good couple of years ago now. I'm still living off it, doing okay. I will update it soon. And that was for £240, done by a lovely chap, Richard Woodhouse. He's lovely. Contact him if you want to. Electric Bees Productions, lovely studio, middle of Oxfordshire. And yeah, very simply, lots of to-ing and fro-ing between us on a couple of script options he gave me. I threw some back at him and then also brought specific books and narration that I know suited my voice because I'd done them on stage and felt very confident doing those. We had a couple of hours in the studio. He then was responsible for all the layering of music and editing and making it sound hopefully cool enough for me to get some future work, and it has worked. And yes, a couple of days later he sent me all the RAV files and anything else that I wanted, with the premise that if I wanted anything changed, he was really happy to, you know, work with me to do that. So cool. So yes, that was all £240 of yummy demo reel goodness. And I find that Americans, the poor sausages, have to pay, it seems, upwards of $1,000.
Yeah.
Between $1,000 and $1,500 for their reels for, I am assuming, the same experience. Perhaps I'm shocked by that. And yeah, they kid, as I said on the Facebook forum, you know, is Mariana Runica of Wireless Productions. I think she said does them for £300. So US folks, you could jump on a plane, get over here, come to Blighty, be in a studio by 9 o'clock, couple of hours of fun, me and Fiona in the pub for a couple of pints at lunchtime, back at home by tea time with a beautiful reel.
Bish bosh, Bob's your uncle.
Well, isn't he just?
He is.
So yeah, I am shocked by that. Why is that? Yeah. What are they doing to these poor voice actors who just want to work? I'll do one for you for 50 quid.
You don't want one of Sarah's ones.
No, actually, you don't, actually. No, I'll put all sorts of my own sound effects over that for you.
Yeah, little farts in there and goodness knows what, yeah.
But, oh, come on. But yeah, I do. Demo reels are obviously a key thing for you just getting your stuff out there. And I put mine on Voices Pro and a few other casting call websites that were free to start off with. And yeah, just tout it about a bit. Send it to, when you're ready to, agents and people who can give you feedback, maybe even producers who, you know, you admire and would like to potentially get involved in their work. Send them a lovely email. Hello, I heard whatever it was you did, and I'd love to be involved. Here I am. This is what I do. And I think that's, you know, one way of potentially opening some doors to getting some more work. Do you agree?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, it's the way to do it. Yeah.
And within that as well, on that reel, I think it's important to kind of think about what your niche is. So from my perspective, I very much went along there with character voices in mind. My niche is that, I think. And currently I haven't really explored the commercial world or otherwise. And I, as I've said on previous podcasts, I do have this game voice, which is exciting. So that's something I'd like to branch out and play with now. I will have more time to do so. But yeah, it's thinking about, you know, how are you selling yourself on that demo reel? And if you have that commercial voice, so that Zach Valenti, beautiful, rich manliness.
Calm down, Sarah. Calm down.
Nurse. Need to mop my brow. Then go for that. That is obviously something that, you know, you can potentially get lots of work in. And yes, it's thinking about, you know, all those different ranges of potential markets for your voice.
Exactly. And if you can get an external person to look at it, so if you can hire a coach who will be able to give you professional up-to-date advice on which niche is your niche, or which niches are your niches, maybe, if you have several. If you're a multi-niche person. Ooh. Or a solo niche.
But there's cream for that.
Yeah. But no, that is definitely, if you can hone yourself.
Am I doing it now? I'm honing myself. But no, that is key as well, you know, because I know this is potentially teaching people to suck eggs, so apologies otherwise if it is. But it's just thinking about that vocal range. You know, your mouth is your absolute mouthpiece for the world, isn't it? Mm. And you speak with the voice that you speak with, but there are so many things you can do with your voice. And just for example, the game voice I mentioned earlier, the lady that's drawn this beautiful cat creature that I'm going to play, said on my first kind of auditions for it, it has a very small mouth. So can you speak with a very small mouth? So that instantly, if you're doing that, it just changes how you how you frame your words, doesn't it? So it's thinking about all of those elements, and if you're going to enunciate or put the words to the back of your throat or make them very nasal, there's lots of things you can do to change your voice, not only where the voice comes from in your whole throat, mouth, extravaganza, nose thing. And I'm sure there's more technical terms for these parts of your body. But it is that whole point of, yes, of what you do with it. So thinking about the pace of something, the pitch of something, you know, the volume, the power you've got behind it, and all the things that, as a drama teacher, I guess I'm teaching children in year seven to think about. Yeah, and it's your use of pauses and breaths and moments and beats and all of those things, I think, you know, are key to producing a really fascinating array of different types of character. Hmm. So, yes, and we were talking earlier as well as about a few problems with drop box use. Mm-hmm. But when it's working, it that's my port of call for popping my files in to then be uploaded to share with anybody that wants an audition or otherwise. Whereabouts, where else can you share files to and from, do you think?
There are a lot of places. Hightail is another good one if you want to sort of send them, or Google Drive as well. But there are a wide range. If you actually just look up sending large files, then, because that is the thing, your files will usually be quite large, you will find a plethora of different places that will get your files from A to B. Yes. So, yeah, see which suits you best. And, of course, your director, producer, client, whoever you're sending them to.
So we were very lucky to speak to the amazing James Oliva, who is responsible for What's the Frequency, a new podcast coming very soon to your ears. I think they're editing as we speak. Mm. It's got a cast of lots of fantastic voices, and I'm very excited to be a part of that project too. It's like Ickle Roll, which is completely off the wall and fun, surprisingly. So, yes, he was able to share his time and expertise on his experience as a voice actor. He works in Greater Boston and Oak Podcast and a few other things as well. Hello, and very excitingly, we have James Oliver with us today.
Hi.
Hello,
James. Hi, how are you guys?
We're very good.
Thank you. It's very exciting.
So yeah, we're doing three-way slack, which is not as salubrious as it sounds.
It's quite innocent, yeah.
It is beautiful. So what a lovely way to communicate. But yes, welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. We have you here specifically to talk about your adventures in audio drama and voice acting. And you're in quite a few things at the moment. So can you tell us some of the things that you've been involved in?
Yeah, you know, most of the work I've been doing lately is actually the body of what I have to show off. So, you know, I started out doing Greater Boston as Michael, which is a wonderful, wonderful show. And then since then, over the past, like, say, a couple months, you know, I've popped up in Radiation World, which might go on to be a regular character.
I love that. Yes.
That is seriously one of the funniest. Yeah. The whisper there.
Awesome.
I love it. And then you got Jinrabi and the Wanderers, which I've already done some guest work, and I think I'm joining them in an upcoming season as a regular. And then just recently I did Oak Podcast, Haven Chronicles, but those are like, I get to play a little bit more of a villain. I tend to get cast as just a guy. You're just a guy. You got a guy. Yeah. You're just the dude.
But now you're playing a naughty man. How exciting.
Yeah. I think every actor wants to play somebody who's naughty, or somebody who tests the boundaries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm waiting for my big drunk scene. You've got those all coming up with a variety of different producers. How else are you involved in audio drama?
I just recently, from conception to, I just went and did the script over the course of 2 months and put the whole season together. And then we just finished up casting. So we're going to be doing some recording starting as of next week and, you know, trying to figure that out because we have such a very international cast.
It's very exciting.
Yourself included. We're scattered all over the place. So I've resigned to the idea of just doing rehearsals and then letting people record on their own. And this way everyone gets on the same page and everyone knows their expectations. Cool. And then just letting them go from there.
Yeah, so that's What the Frequency, isn't it?
Yeah, called What's the Frequency. So, yeah.
And we're going to put a link to that on the page, on the website. Yeah.
Exciting, we'll look out for that.
Taking you back, what acting training did you have to get into all of this in the first place?
Well, you know, I've always been, to some degree, and I think this probably is the case for most people that act, that there was some level of interest in it. Always. Mm-hmm. So, you know, starting from when I was a little kid, I used to do like these things called puppetry workshops from the library. And so would perform puppetry, which I loved. I loved Jim Henson and I loved the Muppets. So it was very much the thing for me. And, you know, did a lot of writing within that group. But I think what really helped spark it, believe it or not, this is going to sound incredibly nerdy, but I loved role-playing games, tabletop.
You're not the only one.
Good. I'm glad.
There's millions of...
No, we do too. Yeah.
Hey, good. I'm in good company. No one's gonna get me.
I'm going to roll a six, see what happens.
Save throw. So... I really took to it, and we stopped playing really like for things like having to do with like battles and stuff like that. We just literally at some point, like we were playing like Cyberpunk and we were playing like just going to work and, you know, being a botanist and like having life problems. And I got so deeply interested in the character and developing it that it just became apparent to me. I was like, I should be doing acting and went on to do like theater acting in college and. Just recently got back into it after spending a lot of time as a screenwriter or as a writer.
And how specifically is you find yourself falling into voice acting recently then? How is that?
Well, I think a lot of us that hear about, you know, like, oh, you should go into voice acting. Like almost, I think almost everybody, whether they've done voice acting or not, has at some point somebody said to them like, oh, you should do that. And there's something so like, okay. About it that I heard it for a while and my wife forever was just like, you should be doing that. And I was like, ah, you love me. So she eventually had a friend that went into it and told her friend that I should do it. And her friend was like, no, he should. And then got me in touch with the guy who became my mentor, Rick Zief. So, you know, I took some classes with him and then I took some workshops and I was having such a blast and I seemed to take to it really, really well that it just seemed to be the thing I should be pursuing a little bit more seriously. So
exciting. So these were workshops that you paid to do.
And... Yeah. Actually, apparently nothing's free. So, you know, I took two classes with my mentor and then eventually did a demo with him and then did a couple of extra like one-off classes and had a blast doing them. I mean, it's a great way to network. It's a great way to meet people of like mind, especially people that are nearby you, which is also important.
Because it's this vast, vast world, isn't it? Everyone's communicating from all corners of it, even though it's round.
And you say that's one way of networking. Do you network with other voice actors in any other way at all?
Well, I mean, I think we have a very unique situation and a situation that I don't know that everyone else has, but we get to communicate via private message system, you know, through Slack. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've picked up almost every single thing I've done over the past couple months has been through Slack, just being available for people to be able to just pick me from like the day that they need something in like an emergency and then being there for them. Been able to pick up a lot of work that way, being, you know, somewhat versatile and somewhat flexible in my time.
Yeah, because I think I've kind of pounced on something and it's, if you can do it in a day, then you're probably more likely to get some other things as well. So yeah, it's like a snowball effect. Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice to help too. It's nice to feel like, you know, that you're being part of a community, especially a community that supports itself as much as we tend to do. We're very loving as a part as part of the community. Yeah.
I think that's what's great as well. Yes, I think, you know, you're singing a line about a donut one week and then screaming for your life.
Donuts, yes.
The next. It's all very exciting.
Don't trust the donuts.
Yeah. So with regards to your warm-ups and things as far as you're in front of that microphone and you're ready to go, what kind of things as an actor do you do to prepare to record?
Well, you know, I usually do a run-through, and depending on the material will depend on how much I'll do the run-through for. If it's a short scene, I don't belabor it too much, but if it's a more serious scene, something very, very deeply dramatic or something, it's something that's going to take a little bit more time to kind of find that headspace. If it's comedic, you know, I'll tend to run it through a few times, try pacing, and then I'll usually do a bunch of ad-libbing too, which is something I've just started giving myself permission to do. I mean, I've always done it, but I've never allowed myself to really mess with other people's stuff that much, so it's something that I've just started doing and I absolutely love. So now if you hire me to do anything, I will give you the final take as a full ad lib, and it'll be long as all hell and you won't know what to do with it.
How exciting.
You mentioned lots of genres there. Is there one that you really love more than others, or do you kind of like the variety of all sorts of different things?
To be honest, I mean, I wish I could say, like, I love it all, but I do. I think if I were to pick something, it wouldn't be hard for me to pick. I love comedy. I love being absurd. I love being silly. I love being anything. It allows me to do silly voices, just being weird. Those are the things that I gravitate towards. And Radiation World, by the way, is very perfect for that.
Yeah. I'm all straight drama, me.
Oh, terrible. Yes.
Comedy I'd love to do more. And I find that there's not so many scripts around, actually, currently in my circle of movement anyway. There are a lot, but there could be a lot more. So come on, writers. Yeah. Writers, voice actors, or comedies, please.
Yeah.
And so you've done the warm-ups. Are there any specific exercises that you do before you do your lines?
Yeah, you know, I used to do things like, you know, the Give Me the Gift of the Grip Top Sock and the Six Sheep Was Sick, but I, for some reason, I don't really remember them all that much. So since I have a hard time recalling all of the tongue twister, I just really just settle for, I don't try to record too early in the morning because my voice is still like not quite representative of what it should sound like yet. It's kind of gravelly, a little bit a deeper bass to it than it normally has. So I feel like that's unfair to do auditions and stuff like that with that voice, because the chances are you're not getting that voice when it's all said and done. You know, and I think, I don't know, I try to personally just be loosened up. So I drink like hot liquids, things like that. But, you know, if I'm really trying to produce a certain sound, like I've done things like, and I don't necessarily feel like everyone needs to do this, but, you know, there are times where I've taken a shot of whiskey, or I've done coffee and lots of cream, so I get it as phlegmy as possible, because there's nothing like a phlegmy performance.
Yes, I do like a phlegmy, creamy coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on a bottle each, aren't we, before this?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. And on the actual script itself, how much work do you do on it before your first read through? And do you mark it up in any way? Do you use paper, or do you go for a virtual script? Or?
Yeah. When I used to use paper, I was marking it, and I believe in marking it. And that's something I would even suggest my actors, if they're listening, that you know, mark your script and find your intentions, find your action in the scene. But, you know, now that I'm using the iPad more as my, because I hate that rustling of papers, I get anxiety about recording that into the recording. So I was just getting lost a lot of times too. So I just have the iPad in front of me on a special grip that's next to the microphone. And so I don't get to mark it. Yep. So I do give it a lot of consideration, though, in my head. When I'm running through it, I do tend to think about the scene. I tend to think about the action. I tend to think about what it is I want, and give that some sort of flesh and bone.
Amazing. And with characters, I mean, obviously you've produced several different types quite recently. How do you get into those roles specifically? Is this something that just comes from you, or have you had specific directors that have given you a complete vision of how they want you to deliver?
I mean, I've never had anyone specifically approach me and say, hey, because I don't think I'm really well known enough yet for like doing other character voices. It's just more now that I think people are starting to get that, like that, you know, for like Haven Chronicles, I sent in two different auditions for the one character, and I sent in like my voice, which he was like, that's whatever. And then I sent him, a second one, and he was just like, yeah, that's a great voice, but no, it's not for the right role. So I was like, all right, that's fine. But I mean, the good news about that is that his girlfriend overheard my audition. She was like, no, you hire him for that role. So, you know, thank God for her.
What a great, yeah, you know. We all need her girlfriend to work.
Exactly. Yeah, no, she's clearly got good ears.
She'll put that on her CV.
Yeah. And as far as like getting into the characters, like everybody who does character voices, not even just accents, but if you're doing character voices, you have like your gateway into that voice. So there's always like the one phrase you repeat to yourself to get it. And then, and then you're in there. And that's important. So, I mean, not everyone necessarily knows that, but I think it's almost intuitive too. Like you have that thing that you say that gets you to the voice, totally, and then you just go from there.
Yeah, yeah. I do Minkowski for my Russian, which sounds quite interesting, and a few other Wolf 359. So yeah, there are elements to that that absolutely resonate with me.
Do you have an agent, or do you want an agent at the moment?
You know, I don't have an agent. I found that there was a lot of things I was just doing on my own. So I was doing things like ACX, which ACX is a site where you can put up your profile and you can audition for other people's audiobooks, or people with audiobooks can come find you and say, hey, I want you to audition. And that's, you know, you don't need an agent for that. And then there's also Voice 123, which I was using for a while. But yeah, I wasn't finding as far as commercial work and stuff like that, I didn't find anybody who really dug my demo very much, because it's very character-y. Like I wanted it to have the representation of some of the character voices that I do to show some versatility, but they're like, nah, that's not really what the industry wants right now. They want like straight. They want you to just be like the every guy. Right. I can't say whether I would or wouldn't. I mean, I think there's part of me that's just, or heavy part of me that's like, yeah, I would like an agent. Yeah.
You had to hit first, he's free. Go get him, guys. Go get him.
Yeah, come on. Get me.
and in real life, where, you know, we have to earn a crust to make a living, what kind of job do you have around your VA work currently?
Well, you know, I used to do sales. I used to also do retail management. But over the past couple of years, I've been actually taking care of my father-in-law. So I'm living at home as a caregiver for my father-in-law, and just taking care of him. And that helps free me up to do this and take care of him.
Yeah. So it gives you a good sort of work-life balance. You can fit things around your caring. Brilliant.
Works well. Obviously, you have been promoting your work on social media as you've been setting up. Are you finding a lot of success with that? Is it worth pursuing those kind of social media avenues?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I don't see how you're going to succeed without it. I really don't, and I'm not one to like to say like, oh well, you have to do this or you have to do that. Like, I really don't understand where somebody is going to succeed without having some sort of online support for something that occurs online. And so, you know, you're going to need Tumblr, you're going to need Twitter, you're going to need Facebook, which probably, to be honest, Facebook is probably the least important out of the three. Even though it's nice, I find that the podcasting community tends to really engage more or less on Twitter or on Tumblr, and certainly the most passionate. But there's also other things out there, like Discord channels that you can go to promote your work. And there's other types of Slack channels that also are purely for fans. And those are places to drop by and to engage. And I think that's the most important part. Even if you're not specifically there to talk about your thing, you should be there just to talk and engage. And the more you engage, the more interest people will have. And they'll, in turn, retweet or be interested in what it is you got going on.
Yeah, it's all about community, isn't it? Absolutely.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. No. I was just agreeing. I was saying that's it. It's community. It's creating that presence. And without that presence, you're just some guy that showed up at a party that no one knows.
Sure.
Are there any good hashtags you think that other VAs should know about that they should could search under?
I just learned one, Podern Family, P-O-D. It really is in modern, but with a P. And then Audio Drama Sunday.
Yeah. Yes.
I use those sometimes. Since I don't actually have a product yet, I've just been mainly sticking to, you know, things that are relevant to my show. But I do a little bit of, like, you know, Audio Drama Sunday type stuff. But mostly just trying to help out, promote wherever I can with anybody who needs it that's a part of, you know, the community. So, you know, Jim Robbie and the Wanderers, or you guys, or you know, Paul Saining, or you know, a bunch of other people that just need, like, Lake Clarity.
Wonderful group of people, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. So you just try to be there, and, you know, hopefully they'll be there for you.
Yeah. So as a VA, obviously, one of the main parts of what we do is the auditioning side of things to try and get a role. So say you have been asked to or found an audition for something. How do you format your auditions? What do you do?
Well, slated? You know, there are several ways to do it. I mean, if you're doing the audition, it's likely that the audition should just be an MP3 if they haven't told you what to do. Mm-hmm. But depending on the person, they may want it in a WAV file. WAV files tend to be larger, so they don't go over email as easily. So maybe you want to get a Hitel account or some sort of Dropbox or something. Mm-hmm. WeShare. Those are all sites that you can, or you can even use Google Drive. Upload. I think I just did that recently for something that we did, where I just put it up onto Google Drive and you can download it from there and make it shareable. So, you know, I think I was telling someone not too long ago, like, you know, just they don't say just assume it's MP3, really, unless you're actually submitting a remote recording for an actual show you've been put in, that's likely going to be WAV then.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
And how many takes do you generally do as a rule of thumb?
Three. Yeah, I usually go through three unless I'm struggling and then I go more. But I usually try to pick up, I have like spots where I try to do pickup spots, like where I always give the lead in line just in case it's too close to the previous line and they can't cut it right or something like that. So I always go back a little bit and then I play, especially if I'm going to play with the line, I'll do that. And then, like I said, usually like at least three. And then if usually whatever last take I'm doing, I'm usually just doing a free for all.
Cool. That's a good way to get much love from your producers.
And do you separate your takes of each line with a clap or a click, or do you just let it run?
Yeah, you know, I usually just let it run, to be honest, out. But there's usually like a nice long pause between sets. And I don't, as I understand it, I mean, and how I feel about it personally, too, is that, you mean, when you're sending in auditions or you're sending in, when you're sending in auditions, I would definitely do a little work to it just to remove like unsightly like hums from the background, things like that. But if I was just sending in raw audio, no one should really be touching raw audio. Just leave it up to whoever's cutting the thing together to figure out what they want to use and what's usable, what isn't. It's really not my job to be like, oh, that's terrible. Like, maybe it's not. Maybe they like it, you know? So, yeah.
Cool. Obviously, you're recording from home. What kind of setup do you have there and how do you use it?
Yeah, you know, every day I go into the closet and I record for a few hours, and then I come out of the closet.
Hooray, finally.
Yeah, it's a celebration every day. So, yeah, you know, for a long time, I used to record right here in the bedroom, and then I started realizing that I was getting some really horrible, like a tinny sound in the room, just because even though the stuff in this room, there's not enough to absorb the sound. So I took myself into the closet and then realized that even that wasn't enough, so then I got moving blankets, and then I started tucking the moving blankets. Because it's shaped like a rectangle and there's shelves on either side, I was able to take one side of the blanket, tuck it into the one part of the shelf underneath some stuff, wrap it around into a U-shape into the other side. So I have this U-shaped thing in front of me. Then I would tuck the other side around me. I'd put another blanket up around me. Yeah, and I created like this neat little barrier that helped didn't deaden the sound too much, but gave me enough deadening to not make it seem like I was in an empty room.
And how many people have you had in there at once?
Just me so far. You know what? I've been deathly afraid of inviting anyone else over to get in my closet with my wife at work. So I don't know quite how to work that one out just yet to be like, yeah, honey, I had like three people in there with me. It was wonderful. We got a lot of work done.
We for sure need a picture of you in your blanket for closet.
I absolutely will.
Jumping out or jumping in. Maybe we can have a competition together where guess whether you're coming out of it.
I will send you as much as you want.
Well, fantastic. Thank you.
Is there anything about voice acting that you don't like, or would you recommend for people maybe thinking about it? Should they do it?
No, I mean, I think if you're thinking about it, definitely give it a try. I mean, you know, I've always been one that I've never really taken to the idea when somebody's like, oh, no, I can't act, or oh, no, I can't write. And it's just like, well, I mean, you can. It's just a matter of, for me, it's always just been a matter of accessing it. I mean, everyone comes with the ability to understand or empathize or to take a perspective from one that's not their own. So, I mean, that's kind of like the first step into acting. But as far as something I don't like about voiceover acting, I think like sometimes I think it's something that a lot of us tend to talk about in voiceover is that sometimes you're just literally like by yourself trying to figure out what it is that you should be doing with the script that you have in your hand. And sometimes you just don't have enough direction to really let you know which way you're going with it. And so you just kind of, especially like me, because I do a lot of remote. So, you know, maybe other people don't have that problem because there is an actual physical meeting. But sometimes when you're remote, you're really just trying your best to figure out like, what do they want here?
I think, yeah, it's very insular, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah, I find that for sure. And I think it's something that I try to rectify and try to communicate with the directors or producers as much as possible to or send a sample at first, so I don't do the whole thing and then it's not what they want. So I'd sort of do a little sample and then say, is this the direction? Is this, you know, the ballpark of what you're after? And if it is, then I'll continue. But, you know, if you do have reams and reams and you record that and send it and then that's not what they want or they want it tweaked, then you're in trouble. So yeah, that's my top tip.
Yeah.
And with etiquette, I know we spoke briefly at some point about your top tips of remote recording, and I wonder if there's anything else gossip wise that you've got, could give us any juicy details about any fun things that you've experienced in a booth or with a friend.
Well, you know, I think, you know, what interesting things have occurred. You know, I think one of the most interesting things, though, is there have been a few moments where I've had the opportunity to do sort of, like, not only am I remote, but I have somebody, like, say, on video chat with me or something. Or in the case of when I did Ars Paradoxica, I went to Misha's place and they were in the booth with me. And Misha has those very wonderfully piercing eyes, and I could literally feel them burning holes in me as I'm trying to act, and just having Misha just like after a take be like, all right, well, you know, that was great, but it's really just different. It's a different experience. Like I've been in areas where like I've been in a booth and somebody's like behind a glass and I can't see them and they're just in my ear. I can do that. But having someone like staring at you on a video chat and like just like, and you're making the weird faces and you're like, you know, got your arms going and you're trying to get the everything out of you, and they're just looking at you like, oh, so this is what it's like. It feels like such a private moment. Like you're giving away everything. Like you're just like, don't look at me.
If you're doing it, I suppose you can just imagine everybody else you're talking to are in their pants and you can relax straight away. Is that what you do?
Well, exactly. Yeah. No, I always imagine that I am working to no one. Like this is just all for me. And that's the only person I have to impress at the moment. And then I just send it off, and then like maybe an hour later I go, oh my god, what did I do? They're actually listening to that.
Yes, I think I apologize a lot on the end of any recordings that I send.
I think you might actually I heard that.
I'm sorry for imagining you in your pants.
Well, yeah, sorry about that.
You're the nice pants.
Just to let you know, full disclosure, you were all in your underwear while I was doing this, so yeah, that's
oh, maybe.
That's a bit.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, James. It's been really lovely to talk to you, and you've given us
thank you.
Advice on, you know, various ins and outs.
I love doing this stuff. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we can't wait to hear you in your next shows. We'll put some links to some of the shows that you've mentioned on our show notes. So
wonderful.
If anyone wants
that would be great.
To find out. And where else could they find you on
Yeah, I mean, I'm all over Twitter. So, I mean, you can either find me at What the Frequency Pod, which is the show, or me, James Oliva 76, or I have a SoundCloud account. I think it's James Oliva 1, and you can find me lots of places, but those are the main ones.
Brilliant. It really has. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Fantastic. We hope to have you in our ears soon. Thank you very much.
And we were fortunate enough to speak to Zach Valenti of the brilliant Wolf 359.
359.
Yeah. We asked him about starting out in voice acting.
So, funny story. I got into voice acting because of being really, really sick when I was a kid. And what I mean by that is when I was in the sixth grade, and keep in mind, this is like around the time, I'm 27 now, so this is around the time when SARS was like a big, like in the news, and people in New York City and around the world were like running around with like face masks to protect themselves. So I got a terrible cough, and it must have been like 2006 at the time. I'm trying, no, earlier, much earlier, like 2004, maybe even 2003, 2002. I don't remember. I'm terrible with timelines. But long story short, there I was with this like awful cough, and no doctor could explain it. Like they like tried everything from inhalers to acupuncture. They even gave me like an injection of like some kind of something or other in my neck at one point. It was a really strange 7 months. Mm-hmm. After which, when it finally cleared up for no discernible reason, my voice dropped like 20 octaves to what a lot very close to what it sounds like today. And the joke in middle school, at this point I was in seventh grade, was I was Mr. Movie Phone. And and which
cool.
I of all the things to get teased about, pretty great.
Yeah.
And as somebody who at that point I think I had man boobs and was just like the least stylish person I knew, and wow. maybe with the exception of my best friend, who I think I hung out around at first because he made me look more stylish. And then we realized we both had the same terrible taste in movies. So anyway, I say that to say it was completely accidental and sort of by the gift of, you know, my folks and whatever forces of the universe conspired to that I have the voice I have, that it put the thought in my head. Fast forward, I want to say like halfway through high school, I actually started to take the joke seriously and was like, what would it take to actually be a voice actor? And my mother, who's a muscular therapist in New York City, has a lot of people in her network, and one of them happened to be a working voiceover actor and a coach. And I had a session with her where she was very encouraging. And the caveat was that I couldn't go to college. In fact, I'd have to drop out of high school and really push to take it seriously and to get the work, because it's very competitive.
Yes.
And and you know, my reaction to that was, okay, this is something I can never do then, because my father was the first in his family to go to college. It was very important to him that I do that. So it was just not an option, or at least it didn't feel that way to me.
All right.
And yeah, funny story for people who listen to Wolf 359, that cough that I had in sixth grade. So I actually went to sixth grade with Michaela Sui, who, if you listen to Wolf 359, is another actress. She's an actress who plays Hera, the computer system. And some boys in the grade had convinced her that my cough was SARS. So and keep in mind, she was like the pretty popular girl in the grade at the time. And I just will never forget me entering a hallway and her seeing me, her eyes bugging out, covering her mouth and running from the room.
Which slow motion leaving.
Honestly, confirmed pretty much every neurosis that I'd had at that point in my life. But I digress. So fast forward a little bit after that, after my session in high school, I was graduating from college and looking at how the hell I was going to make a living and pay back my student loans and all these things. And I still wanted to get in voiceover. I had put in some time with one of my best friends in college was the student head of the radio station. And so I had been able to do the Jive at 5, your daily community calendar for Middletown, Connecticut, broadcasting with 10,000 watts of power. And in many ways, that was my lifeline to the voiceover world, and later actually proved to be a bit of a hindrance in an interesting way. But we'll get there.
Okay.
So graduating from school, I had another phone call with somebody from my parents' network who has been professionally doing voiceover. And the long and short of our call was, don't do it. And his specific niche, because what I've learned is that there really isn't a voiceover world. There's like 20, and each one of them is tiny and highly competitive, but also accessible if you're targeting it specifically and if you have the right voice for it. But and I don't know if that's something that we don't need to talk about that, because we're focused on audio drama here. But he specialized specifically in the fast part of ads on the radio where they where you legally can't speed it up because it's like a legal disclaimer. So you can imagine what that phone call sounded like. He's like talking at a billion miles a minute about how competitive it is and how little money there is and how it's bottoming out and how you should never even bother, kid. And so I sort of gave up, and coming out of college I was a little bit depressed until I, by the good graces of my friends, ended up doing a sort of like life coaching program that, like a seminar that got me to sort of see opportunity again. And I got some great advice about, or just rather, my perspective changed.
Right.
I had felt like, I don't know how to get started in voiceover, so why try? Like, my problem was like, I want to do voiceover, but I have no idea how to get started.
It's a big hill.
And through that coaching, I realized that if I turn that but into an and, it was a lot easier to deal with, because like, I want to get started and I don't know where to start. And so it freed me up to just start asking questions. Like, I guess from the conversations I'd had as a kid, it felt like the whole world was telling me, no, don't do it. And so, yeah, so anyway, having that sort of freedom to go, oh, I can just ask a million people how they got started or how they recommend other people get started. And through that, eventually I was connected with one of the best commercial voiceover teachers in New York City. And I started taking his class. It was like $600. And after I did that, I started coaching with him one-on-one for like $120 an hour. So it was a big investment, but I was spending the money that I was making doing video work to break into voiceover with the promise that it would pay itself back.
And those prices aren't unusual, are they? I mean, that is generally
no, not at all.
Standard.
In fact, so, it was a pretty great value. And you know, he's a working casting director, so he was actually bringing me in for professional auditions by the time I was sort of at that level. And yeah, basically, I kept doing courses and things like that. And eventually, I was connected with my agency, which I'm now no longer with. But I signed with and was with for a year, and it was the most exciting thing at the time. I'd spent a bunch of money at that point. I'd spent over $1,000 on classes. I paid for a reel, a voiceover reel. So yeah, so basically I hit this point where I was in the belly of the beast. I was getting maybe 5 auditions a day, and I wasn't booking.
Right.
And a couple reasons for that, as I was, you know, sort of asking why. One, my voice is great for alcohol, but terrible for sandwiches. And as a 22-year-old, I wasn't eligible for alcohol ads. I couldn't do beer. I couldn't do liquor. So I couldn't sell people a Budweiser or expensive scotch they can't afford, which is really, I think, what my voice works for in the commercial world. And for whatever reason, when I'm trying to sell a burrito, the quality of my voice triggers the part of people's brains that make them feel like they're being sold. At least that's what my coach told me.
Amazing.
And I think I know what he's talking about. And I think it's just that slight polish. And I attribute that not only to my genetic makeup and just the nature of my voice, but also to the amount of time that I spent doing those radio spots where it was me alone in a room without any direction, trying to sound like that guy. That isn't what is marketed anymore. It isn't what is marketable anymore, except for really specific niches. The most marketable voice is like freaking John Krasinski, the guy from The Office, who just sounds like he's just a dude. And that's really what's hitting these days. And I don't have that voice. So how I found audio drama, now that I've taken like 10 minutes to answer around your question, is because all of a sudden in my Facebook feed, a friend who knew I was doing voiceover hit me up and was like, hey, dude, this guy's looking for a voice actor. Like, I thought of you.
Cool.
And that was Gabrielle. The friend was somebody, our friend, mutual friend, Etrus Hunt, who I owe the last 3-4 years of my life to, and just all the ridiculous, amazing stuff that's come out of that.
Wow. Yeah. For one little message. Amazing.
Seriously. Yeah. It was so funny, and I was in Gabrielle's inbox a minute later. Like, you can see the timestamp. Yeah. It's so funny.
I hope he's got that on his CV somewhere.
Yeah, right? Well, and it's so funny because it's like, you know, there I was. I'd started actually doing a different thing before Wolf, which was before the sci-fi audio drama, I was doing a sock puppet web series.
Awesome. Wow.
And specifically, it's called Just the Tips with Ruffles, which was just a bad joke.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah, a dumb pun gone horribly awry. I had had an internship at a company called Howcast, which was all about making a ton of ad money through video production for exclusively how-to videos, because over time, those are the most valuable. That's the most valuable video content online, if you think about it.
Sure.
Because everybody's going to have everybody who has toenails is going to need to know how to cut them. So like, right, so long as it's an evergreen topic and you don't change formats from like standard def to HD to 4K, like that's the only time you really need to upgrade the video. And provided it's mostly voiceover, you're kind of in a great spot. So anyway, so I created this horrible sock puppet series that didn't succeed because people don't like getting tricked when they apparently when they click on a video that says how to do yoga. They hate getting a sock puppet telling them exactly how not to do yoga.
Well, the sock was on your hand, though. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was awful. It was great. I loved it. It's still online. You can go to ruffles.tv.
And it sounds like this.
And my whole thing with that was to like show that I could do fun character voices, maybe break into animation, but without the pain of doing animation, like the keyframing and drawing is not my skill set. Yeah. I see puppetry as a lo-fi way to make a similar kind of content and stretch those muscles creatively. Mm-hmm. And so I jumped at the opportunity to get on a narrative train with Gabrielle Urbina when that
good
opportunity
choice.
Came along.
Good choice.
I'm going to shut up and let you ask another question.
No, well, it's all brilliant because this is so important to fathom. You know, there are so many different routes into doing these things. And, you know, it can be a chance call or a chance message somewhere.
Yeah. That, and in fact, the way that you've done it is the way that is so often recommended, you know, to get the training in, make sure that you're, you know, really going at it in the right way, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this, you know, for as much as it could feel like a waste of time and money on the sort of course cycle and, you know, just paying for all that training for commercial voiceover without a ton of results. One, I think I've finally reached a point where I've paid myself back on that investment 100% and maybe a little bit more.
Yep.
Not a ton more uncomfortably, but, you know, because like by the time you're done with pay to play sites, like voice123.com and all these things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the last thought on the course front, the biggest thing that it taught me is how to be in a studio, like how to the etiquette of working with a sound engineer, like, you know, not touching the mics unless they give you permission, like how the distance to be away from the mics. It was it was a great experience in that regard, being able to come into a studio and feel at home.
Yep.
How much prep do I do for getting into a Wolf 359 session? It really depends. You know, when I'd started out, I hadn't done a lot of narrative character acting. Mm-hmm. So my process reflected that. And so I didn't do a ton of that. What I did do was acting exercises with Gabrielle sort of before we got to the studio. Like we had a day where we sort of did every character as like Emma and I were improving our characters and kind of getting into that zone.
Brilliant.
Of feeling those people out. Nowadays, especially in a cough-heavy episode or, you know, I think Eiffel's near brushes with death, mount the number of episodes where he doesn't have that happen.
Bless him.
And so, yeah, so doing basically what you would do for singing, which I've done a little of just like kind of pursing your lips and, you know, humming. I don't know how it'll sound on a mic. Sort of like going up and down the scale with that like like flappy lip thing. You know, ma 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 ma. And, you know, working up a scale and down and like doing things with like open vowel sounds, that sort of a thing is helpful to just kind of get things warmed up. But I don't do a tremendous amount of that typically.
And regards to like food and drink, are there any things that you would definitely have or definitely avoid before recording?
Yeah, I'm the worst person to talk to about that. I got a friend who's a musician who's like really good about that stuff. And I don't know, I've heard everything that I like is bad for me. And I guess I like it too much.
But then life wouldn't be as fun, would it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, coffee is a mainstay of my diet. One cup a day. I don't know. I've been good today. I've only had tea. But because it's a little acidic, but I think that's really the worst part of it. Yeah, I've been told no coffee, no hot stuff, no alcohol. I really don't drink that much, so it's not really a problem there. But coffee and tea are like the two things that I have trouble avoiding. And when I have water, I love cold water. So, all those things are like not great. But I don't know. I don't smoke, so like, there's that.
Yeah.
Do you have at the moment an agent, or would you want one? Or
So I'm not currently represented. I'm in the process of finding new representation. I'm talking with the people that I was previously represented by Atlas Talent, who are wonderful. It's like a smaller spot that has an office in both New York and LA, and they're not the largest agency, but they've got sort of a family vibe. Like I said, when I was with them previously, I wasn't 25, so I wasn't really booking things because most of the work wasn't quite a fit. And the reality is, while I was signed with them, the only money I made and where I've been making any of my money was basically through non-union work. There's a ton of marketplaces online. My first gig that I think up until recently had been my highest paying thing was this really creepy company that, like, basically, let's just say you might hear from a Zach robot at some point. Okay. I can't really say more than that because of NDAs. But if you ever have somebody calling you that sounds a lot like me asking you about some kind of special offer.
It sounds more intriguing by the minute, I must say.
Anyway. So yeah, I had some weird jobs like that. And then more recently, and I don't know, it's unclear because nobody really tells me, but like, I have a sense it's because somebody's listened to Wolf that like, I'll get pulled in for like an internal ad at a bank, like something that they're doing for like a rollout internally that's not a public, like I haven't had like, with the exception of Flamestower, I was their TV ad voice. It's a product that lets you charge cellular devices, USB devices, using a campfire.
Yep.
And cool. There was like cool. a West Coast production company hit me up.
But yes, so how much work do you do on a script before its first read through? Do you kind of highlight lines? Do you spend work on playing with the lines before? So do you get a lot of time before?
I wish that I could. So at Wolf 359, we rarely have a ton of time to go through stuff before the table read. So yeah. how we make the sausage is Gabrielle and Sarah, or I, or whoever's writing, sometimes Emma, will write an episode. Yeah. Basically, we'll do a table read, and then one or two rehearsals after we do a table read and have time to punch everything up. And then the next time we meet will be in the studio. So typically, before the table read, we have no time to read it. It's just fresh off the press. I've had days where Gabrielle has literally brought us hot scripts from the printer. And and the point of those is just for the writer to hear it aloud. It's for their benefit. And yeah, it's basically about just listening to the words out loud. The point of it is so that the writer can hear typos or weird things or, you know, just stuff that's not working. Mostly listen for like, where can we cut stuff?
Story of my life.
And so, yeah. So that's the table read. And it's there that we sort of figure out what people are trying to do. Yeah. And anyway, I find that to be a good place to do that work of like, what are we thinking about? What are we talking about? What is it supposed to sound like? And I will usually read it through like once more after that, before our next rehearsal. And Gabrielle and I work together pretty closely every week. So like, usually we'll have a conversation about things where it could, what I should have in mind and where I should kind of, you know, be what I should be thinking about. So does that answer
your question? Just because oftentimes you do find that, you know, there's hardly any input other than the script for some audio dramas you get involved in, and so it's very much your domain to decide kind of how you're going to go with it. So I just find it fascinating how each project has its own ways of working depending on the production house.
And do you get any sort of external feedback at all? Do you ever get in someone to listen as a director or producer?
Gabrielle.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Gabrielle Urbina is, I haven't done a ton of acting and I haven't worked with a lot of directors, but I've worked with some. And I've, as a student of film and as somebody who loves movies, I've seen a lot of behind the scenes things. And all I can say is it is a privilege to work with somebody like Gabrielle.
Yeah.
And the kind of patience that he brings to the room and the playableness of the feedback. I know that at least in the commercial world of acting, it is a terrible, terrible sin of like certain scripts and certain sort of like recording engineers that like the notes are not things that an actor can do much with. Like, you know, just do it better. Like, you know, is what it kind of comes down to, which is like, but what does that mean? Like, what are you going for? And so it's just a privilege to work with somebody who knows exactly what he's going for and has really put in whatever he's done to be able to communicate it effectively with actors. It's just remarkable and really great as an actor.
So it's a really positive working environment then on Wolf 359.
Yes.
It certainly comes across, you know, when you're listening to it, it does feel fun, doesn't it? It does have. It definitely comes across that you are all on in that sort of confined space together.
That's awesome. I'm thrilled to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think we were all learning. Like we talk explicitly about Wolf 359 being our production grad school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is we all went to film school for the most part, at least myself, Gabrielle, and Sarah Shackett. We were all in the same film program. Yeah. Sarah and I were the same year. Gabrielle graduated 1 year later. And this has been a chance for us to stretch our muscles in different ways. And I know there are parts of season one that sound like I'm reading a piece of paper. You know, like I'm not in any way, shape, or form, whatever the word of having an illusion. I'm not disillusioned about that. I don't have any illusions. Yeah. So anyway, I think we all learned, like I definitely learned how to act over the course of these many, many episodes. I think we have 50 in the can now. We just recorded the first four of season four recently. So that's been exciting.
Yay! Did you hear that collective scream?
Yeah.
Well. No, that's so cool. Because how did you? Because you obviously do a lovely Russian accent. I love accents. Mm. I do a plethora of them. So how did Hilbert come about? Was that just that you naturally fell for both those?
That's
parts,
a great question. Mostly, it was the god of necessity. We were casting for the thing. Like originally, it was Gabrielle's dream to have this be a one man show because he was sick and tired of waiting to have work online, and we didn't want to go through casting and do all this stuff. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I read the pilot. I like the pilot. I'd love the pilot if it was an ensemble cast because these people are great. And the gimmick was going to be that we think that this guy is like put out by these horrible people. And it turns out he's the horrible person over the course of like 6 to 10 episodes. And a little bit more like Night Vale with one voice and like other people sort of in the periphery. And I just felt we were going to lose a lot in that. And so as we were casting, my selfish desire to want to do more led to that. But also our selfish desire as co-producers to not want to cast anymore was great. And I luckily got a crash course in doing a Russian accent. I was obsessed with accents when I was little. And when I was 14, my best friend at the time was going to visit his orphanage. He was adopted in the south of Russia. And I went with him and his family, and his Ukrainian babysitter at the time, gave us some Russian lessons, and I learned to roll my R's and all these things that have served me years later.
Awesome.
You said that many of the cast had met at film school, and I was just wondering what the difference for you in technique and how you approach a role is from film, which is obviously visual, to voice acting. How do you get that kind of character across with just that voice?
I really, I didn't do much film acting. And so, you know, the only thing I can say is I take a very physical approach to acting in general. Like the few times I was forced into acting because we'd all go out as groups of three with a camera and one of us would have to act. I just like kind of jump into things. I was a pretty terrible athlete when I was younger, but I think I have the mindset for it, even if I don't have the body for it. So and it comes across in Wolf with like scenes where like things are supposed to be shaking, like I will shake. And I set the tone in the room for like, you know, Zach Labresco, like when he came on the show, was matching me like shake for shake, like that sort of a thing. Does that answer your question?
So what are your top tips for etiquette at a remote recording with other actors? So if you've done your table read, you're potentially in the room with other people, are there any do's and don'ts of recording?
I'll tell you something I learned the hard way. So early on, it was just me and Emma Sherjarko. Even Gabrielle wasn't there. He was in LA early on. So we were directing each other. Fast forward to our room now, I gave Zach Labresco a note. And I honestly, like we hadn't set up a context that I was directing and we talked about it later. And it's something that like, as an actor, it's a faux pas, especially in theater. And he's an incredible Shakespearean actor and it's just not something that you do.
Okay.
And that's something that I didn't know. I think it is useful to sort of clarify roles and expectations if you're self-producing an audio drama in that regard. And I personally am of the belief that unless it's your equipment or unless you've asked, you should not touch the microphone or the stands or mm-hmm. literally anything other than your music stand. Yeah. Be on time. You'd be surprised how much of a problem that is.
Yeah. Etiquette is important, yeah.
If you do mm-hmm. want to give somebody a note and you're an actor and you're in the room with other actors, the best practice is to either talk to your director mm-hmm. or to ask the person, you know, could I offer you something or would you mind if I, mm-hmm. you know, made a suggestion?
Yeah.
Rather than kind of just jumping in and being like, hey, man, could you just do the next one yeah. like this? Because it shows up as like a douche move.
Yeah. So finally, why should people become a voice actor if they want to? Mm-hmm. That's the last question we have for you. Why? Why should they become a voice actor?
Why should people become a voice actor? I don't know if people should become a voice actor. I mean, like mm-hmm. in the sense, if they want to, they should because they want to. Maybe that's a bad answer.
What are the things that you most enjoy or maybe least enjoy about that role?
I love voice acting. There's nothing I don't love about voice acting. So here's the thing that sucks about it. You lose a huge dimension. I mm-hmm. mentioned Zach Labresco. He is a ferocious performer. Mm. And putting him in audio flattens the thing. Like you just miss his eyes and his, you know, just like same with Cece. These are people who've put in thousands of hours into their training and development yep. with clown work and like all sorts of incredible modalities and methodologies and all these things that really shine through their entire mm-hmm. bodies. And you lose that entire dimension in audio. Yep. That said, as a YouTuber who was recently found out that he's going bald, I am really excited about, you know, growing old with voiceover because in a way that I think I will become visually irrelevant to the internet. I think that I can stay auditorily relevant well past whenever YouTube's successor or whatever the hell, you know, video online looks like.
Well, I don't think people will be looking at your bald patch, though.
I don't think it'll be a patch by then. I'm probably going to shave it all. And then I'll look both like Eiffel and Hilbert at various points in the canon.
Make campaigns. Be like Zach. Shave everything.
Yeah, it's whatever. You know, it's just I've come to terms with it. I think there's still moments of self-consciousness, but I think that that's a beautiful thing about voiceover is it really frees you up to play in the truest sense any role.
Yes.
You're not bound by gender. You're not bound by age. You're not, and not that you're bound by those things either, but it unhinges the visual coding of who you are for your audience because they can't see you. And in terms of Wolf 359, it's allowed for an incredible universe of different shapes, sizes, colors, and creeds of what Eiffel and the rest of the cast and crew might look like. And it's amazing.
That's what I love, actually, seeing the visual cartoons and drawings that people have done of various shows and their imagining of characters is amazing.
Definitely.
I love that. More of that, please, world. More.
And finally, is there anything else that you would like to promote? Anything else that's upcoming?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing a daily podcast. I'll use the PC title here, Focus.AF. And Focus.AF is a daily show. It's not an audio drama. It's the life behind the scenes of an audio drama actor. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a mishmash of everything from audio logs to, in the spirit of Doug Eiffel's daily audio logs, to guided meditation tapes, interviews. I'm going to put some takeaways from this interview up in this week's series, this week's show. I was only going to do it for 30 days just in honor of my 27th birthday on April 9th. But because we just recently hit 100 reviews in the iTunes store, I'm going to do – I know. We were at 45 four days ago. It was crazy.
Yay.
Because we hit 100 reviews, I'm going to do it for another 30 days.
Wow.
And so I'm really excited to keep that up. Mm-hmm. And so that's happening. And I also do this Sunday live stream. There are actually some people watching it right now because we're recording this during it. It's called Self-Care Sunday Live, and it's all about talking about creativity and self-care, which I think is really relevant to creativity, which I didn't always think. And so it's sort of like the yin to yang.
Yes.
And I love to have guests on to talk about everything from art to mental health to whatever they find interesting. We had a cyborg on a couple weeks ago who has a device that lets him feel the direction of north that you can buy and have implanted into your body today. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like $425 Canadian dollars. It's amazing. It's the first cybernetic consumer product. And he's like maybe the most interesting dude alive. He was like formerly a spy. Really interesting interview. So anyway, Zach.live is where that's at. And the podcast is at focused.af, just in any web browser.
Well, it's been absolutely awesome to speak to you, Zach. Thank you for giving up part of your day.
Likewise. Appreciate that. Last thing, I'm actually part of a new show on the Procyon Network.
Yeah.
Are familiar with them, they're putting out a show called Under Pressure. And I play a character who you won't hear from for a little bit. But once you do, I think you might want to hear more.
Wonderful.
Exciting times.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's just a pleasure to be a part of this. And
absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Until we meet again.
Yes. Well, happy creating. Hooray! What an amazing array of experience those lovely gentlemen have had. And thank you so much to both of you for giving up some of your time to talk to us about your fun and amazing and exciting projects.
Thank you.
You really are talented folks. So yes, we look forward to whatever happens next. Sounds very, very, very cool.
Absolutely, yes. If you want to contact us about those interviews or indeed anything else in the episode today, please do. And our email address is Sarah.
It is, I remember it this time.
Yeah.
Yes, it's podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Yes, brilliant.
I am going to get a tattoo of that put on my arm so I remember it. It's very important. Or maybe across my left. This week, we are excited to share with you some more of the amazing resources available from Podcast Host.
Mm.
They have produced some very exciting information for those actors who maybe are starting out and want to know a little bit more about USB mics. There's a comparison on their website and also lots of other exciting things to explore. So if you'd like to know more about that, please look up at www.podcasthost.com and they'll point you in all the direction of all sorts of exciting technical and informative articles.
And thank you ever so much to all our Patreons who support
Hooray!
Us. We very much Woo-hoo! Appreciate that.
We do very much. Thank you.
If you didn't listen to the last podcast for some reason,
don't say that.
No, that sounds really...
But everyone listens to it.
That sounded quite accusatory, didn't it? I didn't mean it like that. If you happen to have missed the last podcast, we did mention that if you do patronise us with Patreon, we would like to give something back. So we would like to feature your audio drama production podcast trailer. And in fact, today we are featuring our very first. This one is from the brilliant Stephen Cardinal of oraltraditions.org.
Superb. And yes, please enjoy and then pop on over to their website and look them up on Twitter. We'll put all the connections here onto our show notes. So please do have a look at those for further information. But do enjoy the rest of the series once you've heard this fantastic trailer. Thank you very much for listening. Good luck in your voice acting endeavours. And we hope to see you on the audition circuit very soon.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.